ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः. I offer my obeisances to my spiritual masters, Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to all the great acharyas, and to all of you, because you're all great Vaishnavas, who are fully dedicated to chanting the holy name of the Lord, studying Srimad Bhagavatam, worshipping the deity, living the holy Dham, associating with devotees, and in general, going back home, back to Godhead. So, please give yourselves a hand. No small feat. And regarding the topic of Vaishnavas, recently when reading the Bhagavatam, and hearing about Vidura, who shows up in various places in the Bhagavatam, first canto, third canto, 11th canto, we find that he plays a big role in explaining the path of devotional service by way of asking questions. He asks questions to Uddhava, also to Maitreya, and he's designated as one of the great devotees because Krishna himself, just as he was leaving the planet, please imagine this, that Krishna, just as he's getting ready to leave, which is a very somber chapter of his pastimes in this world, he made a great arrangement for how to leave, for taking away all his family members because they were too powerful to stay behind. They would inevitably overwhelm the world by their individual power. So he wanted to leave. He wanted all his family members basically to leave before he did. He arranged for that at Prabhas in a very unusual way, which you may say something about later. But Lord Krishna, in contemplating his leaving the world, was thinking of Vidura at the end. And Uddhava knew that because Uddhava was with Krishna just before he left the world. And Krishna was speaking about Vidura. He was thinking about Vidura. So recently when I was in Vrindavan, I was staying at Govardhan, and one day, I think it was during Govardhan Puja day, when several devotees usually pile into, it was on Govardhan Puja days. Sometimes a few of us end up piling into Keshav Bharti Maharaj's small room, a few god brothers. And I was sitting next to Burijana Prabhu, who likes to study the Bhagavatam, which is an understatement. He's fully absorbed in that. And he mentioned something to me that's really stuck in my mind. He said, just imagine that Krishna thought of Vidura when he was leaving the world. He said, why did he think of Vidura when he was leaving the world? And he said, now you tell me, please. And he said, because Vidura protected the Pandavas. He did service for the Pandavas. And the Pandavas are so dear to Krishna, Narada Muni mentions this, even though they had their own anxieties, and even in relationship to the Pandavas, Krishna spoke the verse, Yasyahamana Grinami Harishe Tadhanam Shanai. When I show special mercy, I take away everything. Like, devotees are like, oh, that's nice, but geez. But he said to Yudhishthira that Krishna's likes you so much, he loves you so much that he stays in your house. Sometimes he acts as your messenger, but he won't leave your house. He's always staying there with you, with the Pandavas. He's so attached to you. This is Krishna's nature. He reciprocates with his devotees' love. When the devotees' love is so deep for him, such a natural, friendly love, that Krishna won't give up the association with his devotees. And actually, this is the goal of the process that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught the world, how to develop such intimate, friendly love with Krishna, or there's, of course, parental love, there's love and servitorship, there's love as a lover of Krishna. And these are all natural states of spontaneous love. So the Pandavas were noted by Narada to be especially in that mood of loving service to Krishna, so much so that he stayed at their homes. And of course we know that the Pandavas were persecuted because although their father passed away, Pandu left, and they were left practically orphaned. Kunti, one of their mothers, stayed behind to take care of them. Madri decided to leave along with her husband. And they were the rightful heirs to the throne. But Dhritarashtra had a natural inclination to push his son forward, and he wanted Duryodhana to take over. And Duryodhana had envy for the Pandavas, so he intrigued in many ways. In fact, Dhritarashtra was in on it. He tried at one point to get rid of the Pandavas altogether by offering him a nice new house, but it was made out of some flammable material. And you couldn't tell, but that was the secret intrigue that was taking place. And just before the Pandavas went off to that house, new dream house he was offering them, Vidura, in code, told them that you're being sent to a place to be killed. And he told them in kind of a riddle that there are weapons that aren't sharp, but still can kill the body, but they can't burn the soul, and so forth. He told them in a coded way, because these were secret dealings that were going on. And just before the time when the house would be burned down, Vidura came and visited them and told them the date that it was going to happen. So they were able to escape. As you all know, you've read the Mahabharata in a tunnel. Everyone, except for Vidura, thought that they had perished in the fire. And then, of course, we know that Vidura, in his own household, was considered an enemy by Duryodhana because he always stood up for the Pandavas. He knew the right thing to do. Of course, you know, Vidura, it's mentioned in the Shastra, was actually Yamaraj. And it's a kind of a funny story about how he was given this opportunity to go out and preach as Vidura. Because once there was a... cursed by Manduka Muni. And he asked why this had taken... No, the sage Manduka Muni had been arrested. That was it. He was arrested along with a bunch of other people who had stolen, but they were staying at his ashram. So never let thieves stay at your ashram. That's one lesson. And he was apprehended, and he was brought in with all these other thieves, and then the punishment was they were going to be killed with a lance. They were going to be impaled by this lance and killed. And then at the last minute, the king realized it was Manduka Muni and gave him a reprieve, and he pardoned him. But Manduka Muni thought, you know, this is ridiculous. I'm a sage. Why should I have gone through all this? And so he went to see Yamaraj and said, "What?" Because Yamaraj helps to mete out the previous karma. So when he visited Yamaraj, he said, "Why'd you put me through this?" And Yamaraj said that when you were a young boy and you were playing around with a straw, you pierced a small ant. And therefore, you had to go through this trouble because of that. And Manduka Muni said, "That's ridiculous. I was just a kid." So, "I curse you to be born as a Shudra." So, Yamaraj then took birth in the family of in the womb of a Shudrani. So she was actually one of the maid servants, and she Srila Vyasadeva impregnated her, so Vidura took birth in that family, but he wasn't entitled to the throne, but such children were born in that situation. Were given all the treatment of a regular prince. They would have land and facility and everything like that, but they didn't really get the same kind of vote that everyone else did. And Duryodhan, when observing that Vidura, who is virtue personified, he was a pure devotee and he's Yamaraj himself, one of the great Mahajans, was insisting that the intrigue against the Pandavas stop. And he was bringing these things up inside the palace. It was palace politics. And Duryodhan became so furious with him that he threatened him. He said he should be, all his possessions should be taken away, and he should be taken out of the palace and should be beaten until he only has his breath left, just barely alive, and you let him go. But before that could happen, Vidura walked out, and symbolically he left his bow, because he was a Kshatriya family, he left his bow on the threshold of the house and he went off on pilgrimage and didn't come back for a long time. So, in just observing his life, is one of the main lessons that I could see and that really struck me was that, as Gopi Pranadana Prabhu used to say, for advancement in devotional service, it's not what you know, but it's who you know. And if you connect yourself properly, if you connect yourself to a pure devotee, and you do service, despite all the other discrepancies in your life, Krishna will recognize you. And he will assist you in many ways that one could not imagine. And so this is consistent with the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatan Goswami, who, when he talked about the process of devotional service, specifically mentioned at the outset of his teachings that the way in which one comes to devotional service is by the mercy of devotees. When one gets the grace of a pure devotee, then one becomes qualified, and the qualification is faith. The only qualification in bhakti is shraddha, faith. In other paths, like jnana and yoga, there are other qualifications considered. But in bhakti, there's only one qualification, and that's shraddha. It means that you have faith, that you see something in the process of devotional service, and you like it, and you think it's good. This is the beginning of faith. People look at devotional service and say, this is a good idea. I like what these people are doing. I'd like to do it also. And that, says Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that faith comes because of one's unknown contact with devotees, agyata sukriti. Somehow or other, one comes in contact with a devotee somewhere and does something, some service. And that little bit of service, or if one does it repeatedly, accumulates. And the accumulation of that results in the birth of Shraddha. This is also mentioned in the Brihat Naradiya Purana. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur quotes at the beginning of Jiva Dharma. He talks about how by accumulating what's called bhakti unmukhi sukriti, means pious credits that are based on connection to pure devotees. If you get enough of that, it wakes up this shraddha or faith in devotional service. And it may have happened in a previous lifetime, Rupa Goswami writes in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In fact, he says, this is why someone is attracted to devotional service, because in a previous life, he or she has come in contact with devotional service, and that seed has been planted, and the shraddha awakens. And so it comes about, how? By association with devotees. And Mahaprabhu quoted this verse, sadhu sangha, sarva shastra koi, lava matra, sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi hoi. That you can attain perfection by association with sadhus. those who are fully dedicated to the process of devotional service, they're pure devotees. That's their goal in life, is to please Krishna and the Vaishnavas. And it doesn't take much, even just a little touch of that. How little? A lava matra means a fraction of a second. And if one has that, then it's a great asset, and then the devotional service begins to awaken. Mahaprabhu also quoted a couple more verses from the Bhagavatam, which are almost identical verses. One comes in the fifth canto, and another's in the seventh canto. Seventh canto, Prahlad Maharaj says, Naisham matisthavar urkramangrim sprishartyanartha pakamo yadartha mahiyasam tava rajobhishekam nishkinchananam navranita yavat. He says that only if you're able to get a bath. What kind of bath do you get? A special abhishekam. You know, we've seen abhishekam here, where we pour all kinds of substances on the deity, bathe the deity. But he says that the kind of bath that you need to take is by getting the foot dust of a Vaishnav and smearing it all over your body. This is the abhishek. It's called Rajobhishekam, because Raja means the dust, right? So if you get the dust from the feet of a Vaishnava and you smear it on your body, then he said, then you can get qualification for devotional service. That allows you to advance. And similarly, in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have another verse that's similar. Who's speaking this verse, the fifth canto? Avruhuganai tapasa niyati, na chejaya nirvapanat grihadva, na chandasad, agni jalagni suryar, vina mahatpadara jopi shekam. So he names Maharaj Ruhugana when being examined and speaking it to Maharaj, to Judd Bharat, says that that's, without getting Vina Mahat Padara Jopishekam, again he says, without getting the foot dust and bathing in it of the... Is it Judd Bharat saying this verse? Ruhuganaitat. Okay, so is it, without getting the foot dust of the pure devotees of the Lord, you can't make advancement. You can't advance in devotional service. You can put it up. Ruhuganai tapasa niyati. And previous to that, Ruhuganai tapasa, he says, you may perform all kinds of tapasya. Nachejaya nirvapanad grihadva. And he names that you might be celibate your whole life. You might... renounce the world. Nirvapanad grihadva. You might be a perfect grihastha. Then he says, you might be a yogi who goes up to the mountains and sits in cold water up to your neck in the freezing winter. Some yogis do that just for fun. And or sometimes they sit in hot fire. They take these extreme measures because they want to detach themselves completely from the material concept of life. And it takes a lot of grit to do those kinds of things. I mean, practically unimaginable to those who are used to driving around in a luxury automobile and then going back to a luxury home. Practically every home in the West is a luxury home. We have air conditioning and heating, and we have running water, indoor plumbing, everything delivered to our house in the next day or your money back. And so many things. This is practically unimaginable. But he says that all of those kinds of austerities will not get one bhakti. You can't get bhakti by that. You can't attract the Lord's attention by doing those kinds of austerities. He said there's only one thing, and that is that if you serve a Vaishnav. If you serve the Vaishnav, and that's what it means to take the foot dust of the Vaishnav, you have to find a Vaishnav And then you have to serve a Vaishnava. May I have the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, please? I know we have one, because we started with 900 copies. I mean, I hope there isn't one left, but if there is, I'd like to look at it. Because the first three-fourths of the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, how many devotees have read that so far in your spare time during your lunch break? Okay, one devotee, that's good. I do recommend it. The first half of the Laghu is a little bit technical. Don't be dissuaded. Just plow through. It's like parikram. When you go in parikram, you got a little gravel, you got to keep walking. And after a while, it turns smooth again. So get through it. And in the last part, and maybe Srivas Prabhu has read you these parts, but it's relevant to what I'm saying right now. In the second part, there's only two parts in this book. The second part is called Sri Bhaktamrita. And this is Rupa Goswami emphasizing the importance of serving a Vaishnava. He starts off by saying, obeisances to those who relish loving exchanges with Sri Krishna. Then he says, the worship of Mukunda is obligatory. So also, to avoid intractable blame, is the worship of his devotees. What do you avoid? That's pretty heavy. Intractable blame. I mean, there's some kind of blame you can get yourself out of, but this is intractable. If you worship the Lord, fine. But if you don't worship his devotees, you're not, that you're blamed. You're not off the hook. Number two, he says, as stated in the Padma Purana, when Vaishnavas serve Lord Hari, they must also serve personalities such as Markandeya, Ambarish, Vasu, Vyas, Vibhishana, Pundarika, Bali, Shambhu, Prahlad, Vidura, Dhruva, Dalbya, Parashara, Bhishma, and Narada. A person who fails to do so will encounter severe sinful reactions. Should I keep going? Is this too heavy? Keep going? Okay. And in the Hari Bhakti Sudodaya, those who worship Govinda but not his devotees do not receive Lord Vishnu's mercy. They can only pretend. Number four. In the Uttara Kanda of the Padma Purana, quote, of all kinds of worship, the worship of Vishnu is supreme. But greater than that, dear goddess, is the worship of his devotees. Five. Also in the same Padma Purana, one who worships Govinda without worshiping his devotees cannot be a devotee. The scriptures call such a person a mere pretender. Six. In the Adi Purana, Krishna says, O Partha, those who behave as my direct devotees, I do not consider my devotees. Those who are devoted to my devotees, however, I consider most devoted to me. Seven, again, Krishna from the Bhagavatam, Madbhakta Puja Bhyadika. It is most important to worship my devotees, from Krishna's own lotus milk. Then number eight, among the devotees of the Lord, Prahlad is considered best. Scriptures like Skanda Purana and Srimad Bhagavatam describe his glories. From that point, he begins telling the different gradations of devotees, starting with Prahlad Maharaj. As this is a summary of the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. How many of you have read that? Brihat Bhagavatamrita, raise your hand. Good, because I just ordered 1,000 sets. It's coming out from the BBT again as a box set. Strong paperback, but I think price is going to be very low. So I got you 1,000 sets, okay? So everyone can take one. And do read it in the Laghu. You may have to call in sick. These are very potent verses, and these are standard in the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees. One must learn the art of serving the devotees of the Lord. And In Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes, as I was thinking about this principle, I remembered the devotee Kalidas, whose goal it was to take the remnants of food from every Vaishnav in Bengal. That's a pretty big goal. He had so much faith in three substances that are mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita by Kaviraj Goswami, who says, don't neglect these three substances. They're the most powerful, potent. He said, the water that's washed the lotus feet of a devotee, the remnants of their food, and the dust from their lotus feet. These three things. So Kalidas went everywhere in Bengal, and he would take the remnants either by permission or by tricks. And then he gives an example of how Kalidas went to Jadu Thakur's house. And he brought with him some beautiful mangoes. And he offered them. First he went in and he said, my dear Jadu Thakur, I have a request now that I'm in your home. Would you please place your lotus feet on my head? And Jadu Thakur said, I'm not even fit to be your servant. I could not possibly do that. So he said, please would you give the remnants of these mangoes? You please take them and then I'll wait and then you give them. He said, I cannot do that either. So Kalidas gave him the mangoes, thanked him, and then went outside. But did he go home? No. He hid in the bushes and he waited until Jadu Thakur had offered those mangoes to Lord Govinda, and he and his wife had taken those mangoes, opened them up, had licked them, sucked them, ate them, and then what was left, you know what's left, skin pulp and everything like that wrapped up in a banana leaf, right? So Jadu Thakur's wife took it outside, and there's a service ditch out there where you throw all the leaf plates, it was before plastic, and the clay cups and all those kinds of things. And, you know, the other animals would be out there taking. But Kalidas was waiting outside. And when he saw those mango remnants go flying into the ditch, and Jadu Thakur's wife went back inside, he came out from hiding. And he took them. And with great relish, he licked and sucked those remnants. And took them with great relish, because he was thinking, these are the remnants of a pure devotee. And therefore, I'm getting this special mercy. And so, one day, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was washing his feet before going in the Jagannath Temple, which was a daily ritual, and there was also an injunction given by Mahaprabhu that no one in the three worlds could take that water. He didn't want anybody coming near and doing such thing. Kalidas boldly came forward and held out his hand once, twice, thrice, and he took the water and drank it boldly right there. And then Mahaprabhu turned around and said, enough. And Kaviraj Goswami says, Mahaprabhu allowed Kalidas this special access because he knew that Kalidas had faith in Vaishnavas. He knew that about him. He knew that he had faith in the power of the association of Vaishnavas. So he gave him special consideration. And when Sanatan Goswami was hearing from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the first thing Mahaprabhu told him again and again was, we start our devotional service by coming in contact with pure devotees, even when we don't know what devotional service is, and they nurture us. It's their kindness and their the way that they engage us that brings us along. And as we're advancing in devotional service, we're sustained by that association of the Vaishnavas. And in perfection, we take full shelter of the Vaishnavas. So we can see from the life of Vidura and from these other devotees this important formula of becoming a servant of the Vaishnavas, of taking shelter of Vaishnavas. This is the main principle that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught, that we have to do that. And also, if one tries to perform devotional service but neglects the devotees, then that kind of devotional service is called pretense. It's not accepted by Krishna at all, because the devotees are most dear to him. And now I'll just take a couple of reflections before I move on to other thoughts about Vidura and other lessons that he gave.
I have a question. So you mentioned about the serving the Vaishnavas and serving the devotees. So natural tendency is that the devotees we associate closely with, it's so easy that we reach out and we serve them. But sometimes, how do we develop the tendency of to serve all in one at the same time?
All in one means?
I mean, to each and every one, because we kind of close to few of them and we just continue serving them, but instead we have a larger community, larger. We want to make sure that how we connect with the each and everyone and serve them, not just the small group. I just want to know the practical, because it's easy to appreciate or serve the Vaishnavas when you are in touch with them. But sometimes it takes quite a lot out of you to make sure that you reach out to other devotees and Vaishnavas. So I wanted to hear practical.
We may not have the capacity to reach out to every Vaishnav, although Kalidas tried to be in contact. But one thing is that we should develop a deep appreciation for Vaishnavs. One way or another, have an appreciation. We talked about this the other night from the teachings of Rupa Goswami, in which he says in the Upadeshamrita, Krishneti yasya giritam manasadriyeta, tikshasti chet pranatibhishta bhajantamisham, shushushaya bhajanavignyamananyamanya nindari shunyam ritim. We have appropriate ways of appreciating Vaishnavas. For those who just say Hare Krishna, then in our mind we worship them, we appreciate them, we think this is a great Vaishnav. And then for those who have taken initiation, means they've made a vow that I'm going to chant Hare Krishna the rest of my life, no matter what. For those people, you take a little more trouble. You make an obeisance. You get down and offer obeisances to them. And for those who have come to the highest level of devotional service, nindari shunya, their hearts are free from the propensity of criticizing others. They're free from envy. Fully engaged in devotional service. And we go out of our way to spend time with them, to see them off, to see them in, to hear what they have to say, to offer things, you know, service and things like that. So there are gradations. But in general, one should have an appreciation for Vaishnavas and know how to worship them properly. For instance, it's in the Hari Bhakti Vilas that if you're doing deity worship and a great Vaishnav comes, you stop your deity worship, greet the Vaishnav, and then you can go back to worshiping the deity. Otherwise, Krishna won't appreciate. And this is the hallmark of a Madhyamadikari devotee that knows what a devotee is. If you're able to recognize a devotee and offer some appreciation to the devotee. And that opens the heart more and more because it pleases Krishna. Mad bhakta puja bhyadika, Krishna says, just worship. If you want to worship me, worship my devotees. That's how I accept the worship. It's the best kind of worship. So just appreciate devotees as much as possible. Try to glorify devotees as much as possible. And also, there may be cases when there are some devotees that are not, what is it called, swajitiya? Bhakti, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu swajitiya says that you should associate with devotees who are like-minded and who are more advanced than you. And so sometimes there are Vaishnavas, but they're not like-minded. You can appreciate them, but you don't have to be intimately connected with them. It's reasonable. Everyone has their gunna, their own group. Not it's like a clique or something, but it's we're like-minded. We have a certain sentiment Like certain people have a sentiment, they feel very comfortable here in ISKCON because they have a way they feel that, oh, Srila Prabhupada pervades this place. His particular mood is here. His books are the main books. They're the main vibration and so forth. And they feel very much at home here with the way, you know, things are. And but there may be other Vaishnavas. There are other Vaishnavas, plenty of them, here, there, and everywhere, who don't have that exact same sentiment. But we should appreciate them also. But they may not be Swajatiya, they may not be exactly like-minded, but in another way they are. They're worshiping Krishna, so we appreciate them. But maybe from a little further away, because we don't intersect as much with them, and that's fine too. Even in Goloka Vrindavan, there are various groups, they're called Gunas, and they hang out together. Because they like serving Krishna in a certain way. The spiritual world's not some homogeneous merge where everyone has to be exactly the same. They're all individual, and all living entities there are, as it says in the Brahma Samhita, tasty. He says they're tasty. It means they have certain characteristics that are very wonderful. Rishaishwari Leela in the back. Please get her a microphone as quickly as possible.
Hare Krishna. I had a question too. So one thought comes to my mind when supposing we are serving, Krishna as different groups, there are chances that we unintentionally offend another group. And if they take offense, then does Krishna forgive us because it's not intentional?
Well, if you offend a devotee, you go to the devotee and ask for forgiveness. And if you can't find them, then you pray to Krishna to help to rectify the offense. Or if they've already left the planet, then you try to do something. Especially, it's mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam that the devotee doesn't get offended. Devotees, they're really hard to offend. You know, you bump into them, they're like, oh, sorry. Hope that wasn't too hard on you. But the dhulis, the personified foot dust of the devotees, become annoyed if you bump into their prabhu. So you see also, sometimes there's an exalted devotee that has a lot of followers, and the person himself might just like, that was nothing. The followers are kind of like, who does he think he is, you know? That's our Prabhu. So you have to go to the dhulis and say, I'm sorry. And so it's important to move in the world in such a way that we're non-offensive. It's like when you walk through a crowd, you make sure you don't step over people. This is characteristic of the devotee's mentality. It's aware of the environment. You walk through and it's like, please make a little crack here so I don't step over you. I don't want to offend you. It doesn't matter who it is. You don't step over. And similarly, if you bump into somebody, you watch devotees. If they even slightly tag somebody, then they're like this, you know, sorry. They turn around and make sure. Of course, if it's during Kartik, in the Vrindavan Mandir, that's a different bhav. Those Vrindavan ladies will plow you down and not look back. We should take that as a blessing, that I just got slammed by a Mataji from the Dom. And if it leaves a bruise, all the better. But for ourselves, we should be careful how we move in the world. And even if we're in a different gana, we're in a different group, we should appreciate the fact that people are chanting Hare Krishna, that they're trying to spread Krishna consciousness. After all, Prabhupada talked about, even there was... one of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's godbrothers, who was at odds with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. They had a major spiritual disagreement. In fact, some of Prabhupada's disciples went there and in early days, and they were, you know, getting some things from him, like bhajan tunes and all kinds of stuff. And I saw the letter that Prabhupada wrote to one of them. He kept it in his house. And Prabhupada said, that this personality is a pure devotee in his own right. But because he has a disagreement with my spiritual master, you shouldn't go there because it's a different mood. And you maybe have some misunderstanding. So very respectfully, but from a distance, it's pure devotee in his own right. That's how the letter opens up. And so we can think like that. It's a pure devotee in his own right, but still there are different gunas and there's different understandings, and that's okay. So when we can find bridges and ways to spread Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement cooperatively together, that's all the better. And when we can't, we should be very respectful and careful about how we connect. And when there's a philosophical deviation, we should be careful to address the philosophical deviation and not the personalities themselves. And Prabhupada taught this principle when the devotees first came to India, and they were just young preachers, and they were meeting all kinds of people who would say, what about this Swami? What about that Swami? Because there's lots of different teachers there. And the devotees hadn't experienced that because they only knew one main teacher, and that was Prabhupada. And then so Prabhupada taught them that ask them what is his philosophy. And he said, don't assail the personality, but talk about the philosophy and compare it to Bhagavad Gita and say, does it match up? Say, well, that doesn't match up with our Bhagavad Gita. But we don't give ad hominem or personal attacks against the person. And that's a safe way to deal with those kinds of situations.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. If it's easier, we're still taking reflections, but if you want to throw a question in also, it's okay.
Thank you, Maharaj, for sharing your the realizations with the Bhurijan Prabhu. It was very, very instructive for us, those who for service, that how Lord Krishna remembered at the end Vidura, and the reason also that why he remembered, because he served the Pandavas. So that is very instructive for us when we serve Vaishnava, that how Krishna notes.
Yeah, and the opposite is true there with Dhritarashtra. You know that Vidura, because he's such a compassionate Vaishnava, and this is the hallmark of Vaishnava, Dhritarashtra had done everything that Vidura was fighting against. You know, in other words, he supported Duryodhana, and he actually tried to kill the Pandavas and so forth. But at the end, he took compassion on Dhritarashtra. And he went there to the palace of Yudhishthira, where Dhritarashtra was staying as a dependent. He was dependent on those he tried to kill. And Vidura very strenuously and very directly told him that you're in Maya, snap out of it. You got to get out of here. Something happened to the microphone. And by his strong words, he brought Dhritarashtra out of his slumber. It's so easy to get comfortable in the material world. It's not actually comfortable. It's kind of like in a dream when you know you have to get up, but then you just keep staying down, even if you're uncomfortable. It's like, no, I want to stay asleep or something like that. It's so easy to get comfortable in the material world, and we need sadhus like Vidura to come along and say, now, get out. And that's what happened. He brought him out. And interestingly, He brought Dhritarashtra and Gandhari, his wife, to the mountains where they could perform some intensive spiritual practice near the end, because his end was coming anyway. And everybody could see it except for Dhritarashtra. And Prabhupada mentions in a purport in that section that there are several levels of advancement. First level is called dhira, means undisturbed. At least you have to practice so that you become undisturbed by the fluctuations of material nature. Otherwise, you just get sucked right back into another body when you leave this body, because you're so absorbed in the bodily concept of life. So that takes a little practice. Krishna says, Matra sparsha stukonteya, shitoshna sukaduka da, agama paino nityas, Tamstatikshashva Bharata. He said, you have to practice tolerating the changes that come about in this world. And then he says, Dehino Sminyata Dehe Ko Maranyovaram Jara Tata Dehantara Praptir Dhiras Tatra Namuyati. That a person who has become practiced at this notices that he or she is changing from boyhood to youth to old age, and then at the end isn't disturbed by the change, the final change, isn't disturbed. What is the devotee? Dhira, undisturbed. And so that's an entry level. At least you have to become undisturbed. So we have various ways that we stick to our sadhana no matter what else is going on in our life. That's one way to become dhira. Like, doesn't matter if you're, just say your pet gets cancer, right? And then you become fully disturbed because your pet has cancer. Nobody has any pets? I've seen it before. Somebody's pet gets cancer and then, it'll cost you $30,000. You know that, right? If you want to save your pet. Your pet's got to have radiation therapy. They have that for dogs and cats now. And, you might become so disturbed that you can stop chanting. Or a relative might die and then you have to continue your sadhana. This is dhira for devotees. But Prabhupada mentions there that above dhira, then there's this point of becoming completely detached from the world and going off as a sannyasi. And then there's a point of becoming a Narottama. Talks about the topmost kind of person where you're fully absorbed in Krishna 24 hours a day. And all these, he said, are achievable in this one short lifetime if you practice through the different stages of your life. And Dhritarashtra started too late. But that wasn't the main reason that he couldn't attain it. Even with the help of Vidura, the reason is because he offended the Pandavas, because he was against the Pandavas. If he had been a late bloomer, but he had been for the Pandavas and tried to, and at least not tried to kill them and so forth, would have been possible. But if you offend devotees, then it makes it very difficult to advance. So that's the counter example. The example of Vidura is there, that he was a friend to the Pandavas, and therefore Krishna loved him so much, he remembered him when he left this world. And Dhritarashtra, because he was against the Lord's devotees, it wasn't possible for him to advance very far, even though he had the direct help of Vidura at the end. So that goes to this whole point that it's not what you know, it's who you know. And if you take shelter of pure Vaishnavas and serve and make their mission your mission, then you can have grand success in spiritual life by that basic principle. Because other ways of advancing may be a little out of reach, but that's within the reach of everybody. If you hold on to a devotee and you try to serve faithfully throughout your life, and I've seen it over and over again, just in my short lifetime, I've seen devotees who are faithful. They're faithful to another Vaishnava. They stick to the service of a Vaishnava, and they advance very handily. What else? Or was I answering a question? No. Okay, go ahead. 1, 2, 3.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the points. I have a question here. As you said about the first level, that the Dhritarashtra could not attain it because he offended the Pandavas, how to understand that Lord is not partial?
Well, it's mentioned in the Gita that he's non-partial to all living entities, but because the devotees surrender to him so deeply and love him, then they enter into this internal relationship with him that's by the internal energy. In fact, give me 9:30 in the Bhagavad Gita, 9:29. Yeah, Samaham Sarvabhuteshu, 9:29, please. Within 7 seconds or less, or our money back. It's like 5 seconds. Two more to go. One more to go. These are seconds of Brahma. As if we give a hard time to the pundit in the booth. Okay, give him a hand there. This verse answers the question, and let's hear Prabhupada's beautiful words. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone, Krishna says. I'm equal to all, but whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. Purport. One may question here that if Krishna is equal to everyone and no one is his special friend, then why does he take a special interest in the devotees who are always engaged in his transcendental service? But this is not discrimination, it is natural. Any man in this material world may be very charitably disposed, yet he has a special interest in his own children. The Lord claims that every living entity, in whatever form, is his son, and so he provides everyone with a generous supply of necessities of life. He is just like a cloud which pours rain all over, regardless of whether it falls on rock or land or water. But for his devotees, he gives specific attention. Such devotees are mentioned here. They are always in Krishna consciousness, and therefore they are always transcendentally situated in Krishna. The very phrase Krishna consciousness suggests that those who are in such consciousness are living transcendentalists situated in him. The Lord says here distinctly, Mayite, they are in me. Naturally, as a result, the Lord is also in them. This is reciprocal. This also explains the words, Yeyata mam prapadyante, tamstatai vabhajamyaham. Whoever surrenders unto me, proportionately I take care of him. This transcendental reciprocation exists because both the Lord and the devotee are conscious. When a diamond is set in a golden ring, it looks very nice. The gold is glorified, at the same time the diamond is glorified. The Lord and the living entity eternally glitter, and when a living entity becomes inclined to the service of the Supreme Lord, he looks like gold. The Lord is a diamond. The Lord is a diamond, and so this combination is very nice. Living entities in a pure state are called devotees. Let's read that together.
Living entities in a pure state are called devotees.
Isn't that nice? Living entities in a pure state are called devotees. That's a really simple one. It sums up the philosophy very nicely. The Supreme Lord becomes the devotee of his devotees. If a reciprocal relationship is not present between the devotee and the Lord, then there is no personalist philosophy. In the impersonal philosophy, there is no reciprocation between the Supreme Lord and the living entity, but in the personalist philosophy, there is. The example is often given that the Lord is like a desired tree, and whatever one wants from this desired tree, the Lord supplies. But here the explanation is more complete. The Lord is here stated to be partial to the devotees. This is the manifestation of the Lord's special mercy to the devotees. The Lord's reciprocation should not be considered to be under the law of karma. It belongs to the transcendental situation in which the Lord and his devotees function. Devotional service to the Lord is not an activity of this material world. It's part of the spiritual world where eternity, bliss, and knowledge predominate. Om Tat Sat. Who else had a point? And if that didn't answer your question, just read the purport two more times when you get home.
I was going to say the same thing, that association, how important it is. All of us, I mean, most of us, if not all, are here in Krishna consciousness because we got association of some devotee somewhere or other.
Yeah, it's so powerful association. We can also notice, too, as we're sharing Krishna consciousness with others, that over time, the association has a way of rubbing off. After all, any qualities that we have, we attain through our association. In fact, in the beginning of the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that every living entity is made of is in the present state, in the way the body and mind is made up, is made of the modes of material nature. And Krishna says, we have a certain kind of a faith. In fact, he says, you're made of your faith. And the way we think, the way we eat, the way we move in the world, all our intentions are because of the modes we've acquired, Krishna says. And then he says, we've acquired those modes by our association with others. And so the great science of Krishna consciousness is to put oneself in the best association possible. In fact, it's something that one can pray for. Please give me the best association possible, the intelligence to recognize it when it's there, to not be envious, to take full advantage of it when it's available. Because after all, you can get good association and then be so envious that it's like, no thanks. Because I'm not in the center, I don't want to have anything to do with this. But if we can avail ourselves to good association, even if we are illiterate or not very competent in other ways, then we will advance in devotional service. And by the same token, again and again the Shastra says we should avoid bad association. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asked, what is a Vaishnav? One of the things he said was, asatsangatyag e Vaishnavachar. He said a Vaishnava is somebody who gives up asatsanga. That means people who like the material world and think it's a good idea to try to get ahead here. Either they think that there's some way to be comfortable or happy in the material world, and if not in this planet, then they're aspiring for a planet where they can live for so long that they think it's forever. But any kind of optimism for the material world, this is kind of a kind of association that rubs off also. When you start thinking, well, the material world's not such a bad place. Maybe I'll make another try. So asat sangha tyag. One should give up association with asats, people who don't have that pure devotion for Krishna. Two more? Yes. Madhava Govinda.
Thank you for the topic about this. Thank you about this topic, Prabhu. In this regard, I was thinking about Amrish Maharaj and Durvas Muni. When Durvas Muni offended Amrish Maharaj, and then he went all the way to Lord Vishnu. And even then Lord Vishnu told, I can't do anything because you have to go back to Amrish Maharaj himself. And in that section, Lord says that how they are, I am bound by the devotees and they are bound by me. I don't know anyone else but them. I was thinking that how Lord says that the devotees actually reside in my heart, actually. And same way, when I was thinking that how when we serve and please the devotees, we are actually pleasing the heart of the Lord. And when we offend them, we are actually causing pain to the heart.
Thank you very much. Very important pastime, which teaches this lesson. And a good reminder also that by associating with devotees and serving them properly, we can advance in devotional service. Can pass it right behind you.
Thank you, Prabhuji, for the instructive class. Prabhuji, I was thinking about Putana's, Krishna's pastime is Putana, and trying to relate here. So she actually tried to offend, not even offend, kill Krishna, but because it was directly against Krishna, not his devotees, was that the reason that she got so much favor that she was actually transferred to the spiritual world?
Yes. And it's in the Lagu Bhagavatamrita. You'll find that Rupa Goswami mentions in the Lagu Bhagavatamrita that especially when one is directly in contact with Krishna, not the other avatars, but Krishna directly, then liberation is at hand. In fact, the wonderful pastime of Shishupal attaining liberation. He was blasphemous of Krishna from the first words that he babbled as a baby. Some babies are going, what is he going to say? Is he going to say mama, dada, Prabhupada, something like that? And Shishupal started blaspheming Krishna from the first words that he could utter when he was a baby. And throughout his life, he continued to do that. And then in the Rajasuya sacrifice, there was an assembly of devotees, and Krishna was put forward. Samba put him forward and said he's the most qualified. And all the great acharyas and everyone there agreed, and they were all set to worship Krishna, and Shishupal stood up and said, "What are you talking about? Krishna, there's so many other better people here than Krishna." He hated Krishna so much. And he started blaspheming Krishna, one blaspheme after another. And there was a limit. Krishna had agreed to a certain number. And when he crossed that, when the odometer went over, one click, Krishna invoked the Sudarshan Chakra. The Sudarshan Chakra is fantastic. It never fails. In fact, this is in Shastra. The Sudarshan Chakra is non-different from Krishna. It never fails. It's the ultimate weapon. All the devotees are actually protected by this Sudarshan weapon. And it says, effulgent as millions of suns and infallible and extremely sharp and so forth. So Rupa Goswami gives evidence there that when Krishna threw the Sudarshan Chakra at Shishupal, Shishupal wasn't completely purified yet, but by the light of the Sudarshan Chakra, he then saw the charm and beauty of Krishna's smile in his lotus eyes. How long does it take for the Sudarshan Chakra to go from his finger to cut off his head? It was within that amount of time, which is a fraction of a second, that he saw the beauty of Krishna, and therefore he was liberated. When his head was chopped off, he was completely pure, because he was directly in contact and seeing Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, yeah, when Krishna comes, he gives special benediction, killing the demons, even the people on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, because they saw Krishna before they were annihilated, they attained liberation. And not only that, he goes on to say, in fact, this is in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, mentioned by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that because Krishna is so special, because he's the origin of all other avatars, and because he speaks Bhagavad Gita, therefore the Bhagavad Gita is the best. And anyone who hears from the Bhagavad Gita, they're hearing directly from Krishna, Swayam Bhagavan, and therefore Bhagavad Gita has this great potency. Doesn't that make you feel good? Since you're all out there distributing tens of thousands of Bhagavad Gitas. Boy, your lives are so successful. You know, you're doing some major work here. Giving out tens of thousands of Bhagavad Gitas all over the world. Motels and streets and hospitals, prisons, everything like that. That's powerful. That's Krishna's direct words. That's him personally speaking to people. It's very potent. Amazing. Well, we try to do some major damage in this lifetime. And you know, it's one of those things, you figure out what the acharyas were into, and then you get into that. Figure out what Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, what Srila Prabhupada was really into. Find out something that was their preoccupation. Now, book distribution, inarguably, that's why I took time to write a whole book about it, so it would be kind of cemented in that there are many things that Prabhupada was interested in, obviously, because he had such huge capacity, because he was empowered. But book distribution, sure bet. You concentrate on that, you know, Shushu Shro Shradhanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi Sian Mahat Seveya Vipra Punya Tirtana Shavana. Hold on to something like that. Make it your career. Do like other people do in corporations where they try to get to the top and see how many... I don't know, what are they trying to sell? Stuff, all kinds of stuff. But if you get into this product and you make it your main goal in life to increase it on behalf of Krishna, the blessings are unlimited. And it's a way this is one of the ways to be in contact, to stay under a pure devotee, is to find the service. In fact, mentioned in the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the section of the Chatur Shloki, Prabhupada makes the statement that the direct order of the Lord is a manifestation of his internal potency. And it is by that potency that one comes to see the Lord face to face. So if you can get an order, like Prabhupada did from his spiritual master, you know, he went to see his guru, he was dragged there by a friend, who said, no, this one's different. Because Prabhupada had seen so many sadhus come to his house, because his father indiscriminately brought sadhus over to bless him. He bring them over and give them whatever they wanted. So he had, even had a hookah there for the ones who wanted to smoke a little ganja. He'd provide them, it just pleased them in whatever way, and then say, okay, whatever it is you're into, whatever thing, you bless my son. Make him a devotee of Radharani. Please, just give him that blessing. That was his main thing, you know, bringing them all in. And Prabhupada had seen all kinds of wild sadhus, you know, come in there. And so when he heard there was another one in town, he was like, no thanks, I've seen it. And his friend said, no, this is different. And you can tell when somebody's different. The vibration is completely different. So his friend said, you come. So he practically said he dragged me. And he came there, and Prabhupada offered obeisances, as he knew was customary. But before he could even come all the way back up to sitting, his guru was already giving him an instruction. He just, as he was sitting back up, you should be preaching in the West. You speak English. You spread this all over the world. I mean, it just came out of him. That, and Prabhupada took it right out of the air. That's where you take it. Right there, you just grab it and say, I got this. Now, that's how you follow a Vaishnav. Take the instruction, take the service, and hold on to it. And then it grows. And you grow. And then your connection grows deeper and deeper and deeper. It's not so much the Vapu, the direct bodily association, but it's the Vani. And if you take the instruction, then the association is very direct and powerful. Yes. We have more.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. When you were saying about Bhagavad Gita being the direct instruction of Krishna, yesterday we went door to door and we met a nice person who was very philanthropic. He was saving dogs. He was actually building schools for children in India and many places. And when we asked him to take a Srimad Bhagavatam set, he was saying, you know, I'm not interested in reading. I'm not connected to that so much. And many things we said, still he did not take the Bhagavatam. And in the end, we told him the story about how Bhagavad Gita was placed in motels and hotels. And one person, how he was saved from committing a suicide in the motel. And next day he came to the motel owner and said, you know, you saved my life. The moment he heard that, he had a change of heart. You know, how one Gita actually saved a person's life, because he was attached to saving people in general. And then he said, okay, I will take the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Wow. Yeah, we were talking yesterday about, because Vaikuntha Nayaka Prabhu brought it up about, you know, well, what if you force somebody to give something? And there is a mention in the Madhurya Kadambini by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that some people come to Krishna consciousness because of the forceful preaching of Vaishnavas. And they weren't thinking about surrendering, but the devotees so eager to get them to do it that they forcefully present the philosophy, and that somehow they're just, you know, they snap into it. They become suddenly transformed by the strong preaching. It does make a difference. The vibration is out there. That's why we do it. And that's why the devotees prepare themselves to be pure enough to go out and have that kind of impact. In fact, it's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Balabhacharya said, when he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and how he was affecting everyone around him with Krishna consciousness, that only somebody who's empowered by Krishna can do this. So that's the greatest work, is to take this as one's life and soul, and then go out and help transform others. This is the topmost work. Krishna's most pleased by this kind of activity, and especially when it's done as a group. That's Sankirtan, when everyone cooperates together and everyone's brought in closer. The devotees are empowering others to do more service, because partly they know that if people get service, then they'll advance. You know, Jayananda was famous for that. You'll hear many stories about how he was always looking to get somebody to grab a hammer. He'd be out on the street. He'd go, "Hey, can you hold this for a second?" And next thing, "Yeah, just nail that in. I'll be right back." You know, and they come back. He'd do the other one. And, you know, 3 days later, the guy's out there. It's like, "What are you building here anyway?" You know, and 2 weeks later, he bit Ratha Yatra dancing. In fact, we know Maharaj Das and Jiva, they were friends. I think they were in the same gang or something. And They were in Sacramento, and they came in contact with Jayananda Prabhu. It was like in a parking lot or something. And Jayananda showed up at their house the next morning and cooked them breakfast. They woke up, there was somebody in their house, and it like cooking. And, you know, it's like, "Here, I'm going to feed you," you know. He just take care of them. They both became great devotees. And so, you know, the devotees think like that, how to fulfill Krishna's desire. Prerogative of the devotees. Hansapriya.
There is a devotee named Mohini Murthy. She forcefully took my dad to the temple. And because Indian men generally they don't cook, and my mom had gone to her parents' place. So my dad had to eat dinner. So she forced him on the name of a dinner. And when my dad went to the temple and he heard the philosophy and the Bhagavad Gita lecture, and that's how he started going and got hooked up to it.
As good as Mohini Murthy too, right? Nice. So just in general, one strong point, you can pass the mic back to Bali Mardan Prabhu.
So same thing as you mentioned about the forceful preaching. Yesterday we are distributing books, and we are at one place. He is from Odisha, and we are trying to say they are yes and no for half an hour for us distributing the Srimad Bhagavatam. Then finally she said no. His wife was saying yes. Then I talked offline in Odia. Two examples I gave. One is I said, "Look, you are in a Ganges, in the bank of the Ganges, and you wanted to jump into the water, right? You put oil, you massage everything, but you are not going because things may be cold. But somebody behind your son came and pushed you." And after that, you don't want to come out from there. Because now the coldness is gone and all. So he said, "What are you trying to say?" "I'm trying to say we are here to just push you." Then he said, "I'm writing $250 check. Thank you."
Haribo. Yes.
I like the Dhuli principle. You know how...
Which principle?
The Dhuli principle.
Oh, Dhuli, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, how, like, you know, if you offend a Vaishnava, they don't feel bad, but their Dhulis get offended.
The Dhulis get offended.
It's something to be wary about. I mean, yes. One can look at a Vaishnava and think, "I can get away with anything," because they are not going to be offended, but there's the Dhuli there.
Yeah. So, you just... it's advisable for those who want to advance in devotional service to find ways to not offend devotees. And the second point from Vidura's life, how he became close to Krishna, he served the Pandavas. And so that principle is there, enunciated, amplified throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's a winning principle that if you take it into your head that somehow or other I'm going to serve the Vaishnavas, somehow or other I'm going to avoid offending the Vaishnavas, just those two principles. If you just live by those two principles, even if you're inept in every other way, you can't keep a tune, you couldn't play a note for the life of you, You can't pronounce Sanskrit. What else? You can't cook. You can't dress right. You look like a slob. Whatever it is, all those things, if you have these two qualities, that somehow or other you're a servant of a Vaishnav, and you put yourself in that position that I'm under a Vaishnav of significance, and I'm going to serve there for the rest of my life, and you also go out of your way to avoid offending Vaishnavs. Go out of your way to avoid offending Vaishnavs. Go out of your way to avoid offending Vaishnavs by mind, words, and speech. If you just live by those two principles, you'll have the utmost success in devotional service. This is the main point that I wanted to make today. Go premanande adibo.
Nacharyar marman. Nacharyar marman. Nacharyar marman. Nacharyar marman. Hey, Nacharyar marman. Nacharyar marman. Nacharyar marman. Nacharyar marman.